This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
Thank you. Here are Friday's closing grain futures quotes from the Chicago Board of Trade. July corn, 360, down 5. September corn, 366 and 3 quarters, down 4 and 3 quarters. December corn, 377 and 3 quarters, down 4 and a half. July soybeans, 924 and a quarter, down 14 and a quarter. August soybeans, 916 and a quarter, down 13 and a half. September soybeans, 907 and a half, down 12 and 3 quarters. July wheat, 515 and a quarter, down 6 and 3 quarters. September wheat, 523, down 6 and a half. December wheat, 537, down 5 and a half. Now time for your cash grain report from the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
This is Friday's grain report, prepared by the U.S. and the Illinois Department of Agriculture. Illinois country grain prices were lower late Friday afternoon, with corn, soybeans, and wheat closing lower following a favorable weather forecast for warmer temperatures next week. In northern and western Illinois, country grain dealers quoted shell corn 5 cents lower at $3.38 to $3.54. Soybeans are down 14 cents at $8.99 to $9.17. In central Illinois, country grain dealers quoted shell corn mostly 5 cents lower at $3.35 to $3.60. Soybeans were down 15 cents at $9.09 to $9.29. In the southern part of the state, elevators and mills reported shell corn mostly 5 to 6 cents lower at $3.40 to $3.67. Soybeans are down 13 to 15 cents at $9.17 to $9.39. Wheat was down 5 to 7 cents at $4.21 to $4.85. Illinois soybean processors' cash bids were down 12 to 14 cents at $9.49 to $9.52. Basis levels were unchanged to 2 cents higher at $25 to $35 over July. High-protein soybean meal on a truck basis was offered at $3.09.20 to $3.29.20 per ton. That's up 10 cents, with basis levels unchanged at $5 to $25 over July. Illinois corn processor quoted air producer corn market 5 cents lower at $3.59 to $3.77. Basis levels were unchanged at 1 to 17 under the July. Illinois River barge loading elevators placed air producer corn market 5 cents lower at $3.59 to $3.62. Basis levels were unchanged at 1 under to 2 over July. Soybean bids were down 13 to 14 cents at $9.36 to $9.45. Basis levels were unchanged to a penny stronger at 12 to 21 under the July. New crop wheat prices closed 3 to 7 cents lower at $4.97 to $5.07, with basis levels unchanged to 4 cents higher at 18 under to 8 under July. East St. Louis barge loading terminal elevators placed air producer corn market 3 to 5 cents lower at $3.79 to $3.80. These elevators lowered their soybean bids 13 to 15 cents at $9.61 to $9.63. Soft wheat was 6 to 7 cents lower at $5.15 to $5.16. Milo closed 5 cents lower at $4.10 to $4.26. Contract bids to producers for fall delivery grain in northern and western Illinois. Fall delivery shell corn contracts were offered at $3.40 to $3.53. Fall delivery soybean contracts range from $8.48 up to $8.83. In central Illinois, fall delivery shell corn contracts range from $3.33 to $3.51. Fall delivery soybean contracts at $8.72 to $8.87. In the southern part of the state, elevators and mills reported shell corn contracts at $3.40 to $3.54 for a new crop. New crop soybeans were offered at $8.72 to $8.92, and June-July delivery soft wheat contracts were quoted in a range of $4.81 to $5.03. That concludes Friday's grain market summary.
And here are Friday's closing livestock futures quotes from the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. June live cattle, 152.12, down 25 cents. August live cattle, 150.70, down 20 cents. October live cattle, 152.60, down 2 cents. August feeder cattle, 219, up $1.27. September feeder cattle, 218, up $1.17. October feeder cattle, 217, up $1.10. June lean hogs, 83.72, down 5 cents. July lean hogs, 83.72, down 12 cents. August lean hogs, 83.72, down 35 cents. Now time for your cash livestock report from the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
Thank you. This is Bob Reese with the Illinois Department of Agriculture with Friday the 22nd's afternoon livestock report. Starting with the National Daily Direct Hog Report, calculations for a 200-pound pork carcass traded $1.03 lower in the range of $69 to $80, with the weighted average carcass price of $77.18. From the Illinois Direct Sow Report, slaughter sows were trading mostly steady, with moderate demand for moderate offerings. U.S. 1 and 3 grade sows under 400 pounds were 22 to 27, 4 to 5 weights 26 to 31, 5 to 6 weights 30 to 33, and 6 weights and up 32 to 35. On the Illinois direct hog trade, barrels and gilts at country buying points were trading steady, with moderate demand for moderate offerings ranging from $53 to $58. Receipts for Illinois hogs today totaled 7,708 head. And now for the report from the Walnut Livestock Auction from Thursday, May 21st. They had receipts of 162 head compared to last week. Slaughter steers and heifers sold $3.50 lower. Slaughter Holstein steers sold a dollar lower. Starting with the choice slaughter steers, they ranged in price from $157.50. to $160.25. Choice slaughter Holstein steers were $143 to $148, and choice slaughter heifers $157 to $160.75. On to slaughter cows. Premiums were bringing $141, breakers $105 to $112, with some high dressing at $119. Boners were $104 to $110. And some high dressing at $118. Leans were $96. Now in the direct cattle trade from the National Daily Direct Slaughter Cattle Report, steers on a live basis traded at $158 to $161, and on a dress basis $250 to $253. Heifers on a live basis traded at $159 to $160, and on a dress basis $250 to $253. From the National Daily Pork FOB Plant Report, trading for retail and processing cuts were established with 264 loads traded. Calculations for a 200-pound pork carcass, $84.77, and that was $1.16 lower. From the National Box Beef Cutout Report, values for choice and select beef carcasses were trading lower. Choice carcasses, $260.25, that was $1.97 lower, with select carcasses at $247.62, that was $1.70 lower. For the estimated daily slaughter under federal inspection, cattle slaughter was estimated at 109,000, that compared to 111,000 last week and 114,000 a year ago. Hog slaughter was estimated at 411,000, that compared to 410,000 last week and 393,000 a year ago. That concludes our livestock report. I'm Bob Reese with the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
Thanks for tuning in to this Saturday's Horse Show. This Saturday, I sat down and had a conversation with Chick Bishop, a local equine enthusiast with years of built-up knowledge and expertise on the horse industry and the people who have helped to build it. When speaking of horsemen, many people immediately conjure up the image of your stereotypical cowboy. The cowboy has been ingrained into American culture not just because of their historical role, but also because of Hollywood. That's right, Hollywood. From the 1930s to the 1960s, cowboy movies were extremely popular. However, bringing horsemen into the spotlight while creating a memorable image also distorted the reality of cowboys. Today, Bishop goes over the era of cowboy movies and the differences between what people may perceive and what was really going on behind set.
Well, Republic Pictures, founded in 1935 by Herbert J. Yates, he had a reputation of making good movies quickly and cheaply. And lo and behold, Republic made 386 Western movies from 1935 until the 50s, when it lost that matinee audience to TV. And that's kind of the thumbnail history of the Westerns.
That is a lot of movies. And I take it, with all of these movies being made and the popularity of them, that they kind of altered the image of what a cowboy is.
What a cowboy was in the 30s and 40s, what a cowboy really was, is nothing like the cowboys that you see on TV. Nothing at all. The dress or anything else. Stetson hats just celebrated their 150th anniversary. Early Stetsons didn't look anything like what the cowboys wear today.
And when looking at these movie stars, an important point you brought up earlier is that some of them didn't know how to ride.
Not some of them, most of them had to take lessons from someone to learn how to ride a horse and stay on a horse. And see, back then, it was a different ballgame. Now, today, you see these movies, and these guys are riding horses with silver saddles and martingales and breast straps and beautiful bridles and big bits. That wasn't the way it was back then. And it was a different story, and it was a different era. The horses were different back then. That's the reason the image of the cowboy is not representative of what the cowboy really was about.
So when making these movies, did they have real cowboys on the set to try to help guide these people, guide the actors, as well as help out with the horses who were also starring in the movies?
They sure did. And those second, if there was a posse, if there was a gang, or if there was 8 or 10 in a group riding, those would all be cowboys who were raised on the ranches and raised with horses, and they'd be riding half-broke horses. If you watch some of those old movies, you'll see that those horses were really bang-tailed, and they'll hold their head up high, and they'll be fighting the bit the whole time. And if you watch close enough, you'll see some of them actually trying to buck the riders off. But they'll never get it done, because those old boys were cowboys, and they were raised on ranches. And for that reason, the horses in those old movies are a lot different than the horses in the TV shows now. I'm glad you brought that up. Good question.
And earlier you were really going into some of the important people who were around and helping to change all this and helping out with these movies. So let's just start out with some of the people you think were the most influential in this time.
Well, if I may, I'd like to say the first movie, Cowboys, to give his horse cool billing was William S. Hart, and that was way back when. His horse Fritz was the first B Western equine star. And the real pioneer, though, of this was Tom Mix, who was a real cowboy down at the 101 Ranch in Oklahoma. And his horse Tony, and then as he got older, had a horse called Tony Jr., was trained to do tricks, and Tom could do a lot of that himself. And those horses of Tom thought so much of his horses, they became co-stars. But most of the horses that you saw in those movies and in TV now were horses that were bought, owned, or sold to the companies by Glenn Randall. Glenn Randall trained most of those stars' horses. And he was just a genius at training horses, and he could make them do things that you can't imagine. And he had people all over the United States. Glenn Randall had people that he could call, and any time they found a beautiful horse, he could purchase and train and rent or sell that horse to a cowboy movie star.
I'm not sure if we made this clear earlier, so I just want to touch on this, too, that not only did the actors starring in these cowboy movies have seconds to do the riding scenes for them, the horses starring in the movies also had seconds. There were multiple horses to play a single character horse on these movies.
Absolutely. In fact, let's just talk about Roy Rogers. He may be the best example. Roy Rogers' horse name was Trigger, but Roy Rogers had seven different triggers over the period of his span of movies and then TV. And as we talked earlier, if you were seeing a fast scene, you would see Roy riding at a distance, and he'd be on a long, tall, thin Palomino horse, and that was one of his triggers. But on all the close-ups, he was on Trigger or Trigger Jr. It's a fascinating story about these people and their horses. But Gene Autry had so many champions, and then his first champion, as I told you, and the first trigger were Tennessee Walking Horses. But Gene Autry was in the movies so long, and then on TV, he had the first cowboy Western TV show. He had several champions, and his first champions were Jet Black with four white stockings and a blaze, and then one of them had a big white spot on his stomach. His best champion was a chestnut quarter horse, and nobody ever seems to care, or a lot of the people that know horses would see the difference and know the difference over the years, but he had several different champions.
While some cowboy actors rode many different horses for their roles, there were also actors on the other end of the spectrum who rode one horse for many different movies.
Rex Allen, who was born and raised on a ranch down in the Wilcox, Arizona, he was a cowboy. And he ended up with Coco. Coco was about a 14, 1 or 2, half Morgan. I'd never seen anything that color before. It was a chocolate color like I've seen Shetland ponies that color, but never a horse. A light mane and tail, and he was a stallion. And Glenn bought that horse, and he came from St. Louis, by the St. Louis area. Got him out to California, and that was going to be Dale Evans' horse to ride, but he was a stallion, and he was too much horse. Dale couldn't handle him, and Rex Allen saw him out on a pasture, and he said, "There's my horse," and he ended up with Coco and rode him for years. And of course, a lot of the guys had several horses. They would ride them in different movies. They didn't own them, but Jimmy Stewart rode a horse, a little sorrel stallion named Pie, and Jimmy Stewart was the only guy that could ride the horse. He almost killed Glenn Ford, and there were some other people tried to ride him, and Jimmy Stewart couldn't buy him. They wouldn't sell the horse because they would rent him, but Jimmy loved that horse, and the horse loved Jimmy, but he never got to own him. And that horse, Pie, died in 1970.
Of course, when talking about cowboy movies, it's hard not to mention John Wayne. Bishop says there are a few things about John Wayne and the horses he rode that may surprise some John Wayne movie fans.
Now, I want to tell you about John Wayne, if I may. John Wayne was in the movies over a long period of time and made over 100 himself. He rode many different horses in those movies. Everything from a little Appaloosa stallion to the two horses that he liked the most was a horse called Duke and a horse called Old Dollar. Old Dollar was the one that he ended up with in The Shootist, the last movie he made. That was maybe his favorite horse. Old Dollar sold, he was advertised at $7,500. I called about him, and he'd already been sold to Jerry Thomas up in Michigan for $7,500, and Jerry Thomas had about 300 horses up there, and Jerry Thomas was a guy that won the Republic Studio lookalike for John Wayne. He was only about 6'2". He wasn't as tall as John, but boy, when he looked at you with those eyes and when you heard him speak, you thought you were talking to John Wayne, and he could sit on a horse beautifully, and he ended up with Old Dollar. The other thing I want to tell you about John Wayne, John Wayne didn't like horses. Now, he liked the two I mentioned, but he really didn't care about horses. John Wayne wasn't a good rider. If you watch any of his movies, he always rode in a saddle that was too small for him. Looked like about a 15 or 15 and a half inch saddle, and he needed probably a 16 or 16 and a half saddle. But you'll see him grabbing the saddle horn. Anytime a horse breaks into a canter or something like that, John Wayne's getting hold of the saddle horn. He didn't have a lot of great horse riding ability.
One movie in particular that had a large impact on how people viewed cowboys was The Virginian. While many may immediately imagine leading man James Drury, there was another character that did their best to steal the show.
Horn Wister wrote a book called The Virginian. Well, that's the book that defined the American cowboy. And it started the cowboy craze in the East and away from the ranches. And several movies were made of The Virginian, and different people played the part. But when the series came out on TV, the Virginian was James Drury. And James is a good friend of ours. He's been here. And James was perfect for the part of the Virginian. He rode two different horses, Joe and Sam, and a little white leopard Appaloosa that he rode, got famous for. He said nobody wanted to be in a close-up with Sam because that he'd steal every scene. If there was a scene where that, he said, if one guy talked, the ear on that side of the horse would go over there like he was listening to him. When the other fella talked, his ear go the other way and listen to what that guy was saying. And then the horse would do something that, he said, would just steal the scene. And people got to where they'd say, well, get that horse out of there when we're on the close-ups because he'll steal the scene from us.
But, now that's something you don't hear every day, people being jealous of an animal for getting too much attention during their scene.
Well, that was the case with the Virginian and that little Appaloosa of his.
Bishop clearly has a passion for cowboy movies, horses, and anything to do with the cowboy era in general. And, of course, he has some favorites he can pick out from his most loved genre.
Well, my favorite actor, without a question, was Dale Robertson. Dale Robertson was voted the finest horseman in the movies as a rider. Well, he was a cowboy. Not a cowboy. He was a horseman. And he ended up raising running quarter horses. He's my favorite. Dale Robertson was. And I think there's two movies that I still love and watch, and I have the DVDs on. One is Red River, the black and white series that's on right now on the Western Channel with John Wayne and Montgomery Clift. That's really they take a lot of liberties, but it's about the first herd to come up the Chisholm Trail, supposedly. And I speak quite a bit in the West about the cattle drive era. And then the other one is John Wayne and the Searchers. That movie, they try to be very, very authentic in that movie. And if you haven't seen the Searchers, you ought to get it, boy. It'll keep you awake.
With his vast background knowledge of horses, cowboys, and almost anything that can relate to the two, it may be easier for Bishop to look at a cowboy film with a critical eye and pick out the interesting tidbits that a regular viewer may miss. But he says it's easy to become a more critical viewer and get even more out of those classic movies.
Look at the tack. Look at the saddles. Back when it was supposed to be all A-fork saddles, you may see a movie made in the 40s, and the guy's riding a padded seat saddle. Well, they didn't have them. But that's just one of the things. And a lot of the guys use tapaderos. You don't see many tapaderos, open stirrups. And as I say, and watch the horsemanship of the guys on these horses other than the lead man. And you'll find that those guys were cowboys. They were ranch cowboys that went to the Hollywood area and made their living as seconds or stand-ins.
Again, speaking on the era of cowboy movies, that was Chick Bishop. That's all for this Saturday's Horse Show. For WSMI, I'm Angela Besh. Thanks for tuning in.